After three whole movies, this century-old vampire and his teen bride are finally going to mash their pale bodies together. But vampire-human pregnancy is a bit tricky. That's the actual plot of Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. It's the number one movie in America. I'm here with some captive apes trying to break out of prison. It's Robin Hitchcock.
I'm drinking a blood milkshake.
And Camila Adams.
I hate everyone involved with the Twilight movies still.
Oh my God. Let's peel back the curtain just slightly, just for a second. As every podcast has done at one point or another, we just talked for about 15 minutes before realizing that we were not actually recording. With a lot, if this were the teacher's episode, that would be a big problem. Here, I'm not worried at all.
No.
Because we can complain about Twilight until the world opens back up again and never run out.
It's no, true.
This is going to be an ongoing. After I finished watching it, it was like sporadically. I would just like burst into like, and another thing, and blah blah blah. I was upset for a sweet 24 hours after this.
Should we recap? Recap the lost content?
Let's just recap instead of trying to organically recreate it. Like, let's just say, like, okay, so we started with me, Robin Hitchcock, saying, or no, we started with Sean saying that he thought that this would retroactively be not as bad because in the interim we have experienced 50 Shades of Grey. So speak on that, Sean.
The thing with everyone in the world knows this, 50 Shades of Grey began its life as Twilight fan fiction, where this online fanfic writer upset that Twilight never devolves into pure vampire erotica, which, legitimate complaint, not arguing with you there, set out to write some kinky shit for Edward and Bella. And at a certain point, just took the Twilight references out, and it became a thing. And so I thought, well, I hated those movies. They were really, really bad on every, you know, measurable level. Surely, having experienced that, going back to Twilight, I'm going to be like, this isn't so bad. And no, it's so bad.
It's worse.
It is, definitely. Yeah, like the best thing that I can say about the 50 Shades movies, I would most definitely watch them again before I had to be exposed to this Twilight shit again. But
10,000%.
The best thing that I would say the 50 Shades movies gave for me was Beyonce's sexy version of Crazy in Love.
So this is not a recap. This is a new conversation. The soundtrack for the 50 Shades of Grey movies are universally good. It's
right.
Like all the sexy covers of pop songs are amazing. The Weeknd song that was nominated for an Oscar, which is why I saw the first one, is also really great. The Taylor Swift and Zayn song from the second one is really great. Like the soundtrack of the 50 Shades movies are so good. Which is interesting because the soundtrack for the Twilight movies are allegedly good. I really like that Bruno Mars song that they play over the credits in this one, the It Will Rain.
Oh, I missed it.
The thing about the Twilight soundtrack is I read a book around this time, and I wish I could remember what it was called. It's the first book I ever bought because I saw a book trailer. The whole deal is like it's this woman talking, it's like a pseudo-memoir where she's like, here is my life through appreciating music. And one of the chapters is about how good the Twilight soundtrack is and how there's going to be this like micro generation of teenage girls who learned about good music from the Twilight soundtrack. She was imagining them going to college and meeting boys and explaining why they like certain artists and saying like, oh, well, they had this song in the Twilight soundtrack, and then those boys judging them and then them internalizing that misogyny and all this stuff. And it's like 1,000% my jam.
Which I like this.
segues back to what I was saying on our fake recording, which is that I guested on an episode of You Can't Handle the Truth, the Big Brother to our podcast. It was for one of the 50 Shades movies. I don't remember which one. But my whole like thesis in that episode and why Sean asked me to come on was that I was saying that the 50 Shades movies are bad, but they get disproportionate hate and are like put on every critic's like worst of the year list when they're really not the worst movies of the year. They're just trashy, bad movies because they are made for women and tied into fan fiction and tied into young adult writing. And so it's like a misogyny free-for-all. It's like a pass for people mm-hmm. to hate women because the content is undeniably not good.
Right.
I'm trying, Robin, I'm trying to think of the first time, if the first time you and I ever did something one-on-one was watching a 50 Shades movie.
That might be true.
And
awkward.
Yeah, there was a... You know, today I wouldn't think anything of it, but like at the time it's like, okay, this person is a platonic friend whom I don't know that well, and we're just gonna watch porn for 2 hours. Right. Is that
weird? Hi, nice to meet you. Let's step into the S&M dungeon.
Fortunately, the 50 Shades movies aren't that hot, so no. It was okay.
No, but... there's probably like 7 minutes total in all three movies that are legitimately hot.
You're right. How much softcore porn there was. I mean, like, it's super soft. It's pillowy softcore. But there's like 5 or 6 minutes straight of just them canoodling and breaking beds on their honeymoon in this movie, Twilight Breaking Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Camila and I watched Breaking Dawn Part 1 on the television network Freeform to avoid paying $4 for it.
Exactly.
So maybe there was... Was there some side boob cut out? I don't know. You might have seen a more steamy vampire. There was definitely a commercial break in the middle of the sex scene, so you might have seen a steamier vampire content than we did.
No side boob. A lot of back. A lot of both of their naked backs.
Flexing arms.
Mm-hmm. Like that thing that movies do where they show you your like thrusting muscles.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like... I think it's supposed to be sexy, but usually it just makes me think about rowing machines.
Let me just get this out. I apologize in advance for the following statement. Is it just me, or is Kristen Stewart way hotter the gayer she gets? Right?
1,000,000%.
Oh, yeah, I would say so. I would say so. And I don't really see it for her, for anything. But like the trailer, just seeing her from the trailers and Charlie's Angels, it's like, yeah, like most definitely, like she... I don't know what she is. Like, first, is she gay?
She's bisexual.
Okay. But yeah, it's like, I don't know why she was cast as Bella. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Now, when I see her now, it's like, man, I kind of can't take my eyes off of you. And I looked at her in this movie, and the only thing I can compare it to is if, like, someone you know from high school posts their like fun beach pictures on Facebook and you look and you're like, oh, they weren't that hot. Like, that's her in this movie.
right.
Wow. My Kristen Stewart theory is that she is great when she's having a good time and terrible when she's miserable. And so I think that maybe her like being able to come out of the closet and live her life and date who she wants to date has led to her more frequently having a good time. Mm-hmm. So I think that she has a much higher batting average now. I think she's also someone who's like learned on the job how to act.
It's like almost like she was being held hostage these Twilight movies.
It does feel that way.
Maybe technically that is the case. Like, you know, maybe the first one she was like, sure. But then like all 13 ones that came after it, she was like, I don't want to do this anymore. They're like, you signed a contract.
Right.
You have to.
And then there was also like the whole thing where people thought that her relationship with Robert Pattinson was like fake and for public relations. And like, I'm always so skeptical about that stuff. Like,
yeah,
I typically don't believe that, but I feel like maybe it did happen here.
Like, yeah, because I mean, you still hear stories about that from like old Hollywood, like, you know, how starlets and their, you know, older co-stars are set up with by their agents because they think it'll look good in the public. And I'm sure it happens now. I can't, you know, point out who and whose relationship is fake and who's real. But to to paraphrase the wisdom of Joey Tribbiani, if the couple is hooking up in real life, there is no chemistry on screen or on stage. So as if that's the case, then I would say that, that yes, Robert and Kristen were actually doing it in real life.
Now, I remember being convinced that these two were terrible actors. Like Kristen Stewart now, I think is usually very good and getting better. But even contemporaneously, I remember seeing Adventureland, and I thought, oh, she's pretty good in this. Like, Robin, I think you're right. I think Robert Pattinson has had a longer path to knowing what he's doing. I think he's just about there. But
does he
I think
know
you're
what
right.
he's I
think,
doing? I saw The Lighthouse.
I feel like he liked The Light.
Did he just kind of like drop off the face of the earth after Twilight for a while?
He did a bunch of indie movies to regain street cred.
No. Now, I think the first thing I saw Kristen Stewart in was Panic Room when she was very young.
Yeah.
Tween oh, yeah. Baby.
I thought she was great in that, and I had a difficult time connecting the two, that she was the same person in the Twilight movies.
I also remember that surprising moment.
We could do this forever.
Let's do the 60-second plot recap.
Oh, that's right. We haven't even done that yet.
It's almost 15 minutes in our second 15 minutes of recording.
There's so much ground to cover. It's my turn. So somebody tell me when to go. Bella's getting ready to get married. Her rejected werewolf buddy Jacob is mad that she's gonna bang Edward as a human because he could literally fuck her to death. Fortunately, he only injures her and gets her pregnant with a super growing baby that will definitely blast out of her like a shotgun. Some of the other vampires want an immediate abortion, but she talks them out of it because this is a Christian movie. The fetus, who is mind-texting with Jacob by this point, breaks Bella's spine and they begin a vampire C-section. Blood makes all the vampires go wacky. They deliver the baby successfully, but Bella is dying, so Edward finally makes her a vampire. Jacob falls in love with the newborn, and no, I won't explain that to make it less creepy because it doesn't get less creepy. The werewolves attack because reasons, but Jacob stops them because he is eventually going to marry this newborn, and Bella goes full goth. The end.
You've covered many of my questions with just accepting these things to be true. I have 4 pages of notes on this movie, and I just kept writing down questions.
No, what was his time? What was Sean's time?
It was less than a minute.
Oh, okay,
it was good. Fine. You were fine.
Okay, so Robert, should we get into the questions, or should we just go on to the facts-y? Let's get facts-y.
Let's get facts out there.
Let's get facts out of the way so that we can do this all day if the mood strikes us. Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1 was released November 18th, 2011, the 36th number one film of the year. That is a lot. There were 39. That's a very high number. It earned a massive $138.1 million in its first frame. Two other new releases in the top 10. Happy Feet 2 came in second, $21.2 million. And Oscar winner, which Robin coincidentally referenced before we started recording, even the fake recording, The Descendants, debuted, snuck into 10th with $1.1 million, despite only opening on 29 screens that weekend. The following weekend was Thanksgiving. Breaking Dawn easily won that, more than $61 million. Held off the debuting Muppets. The new Muppets. It also won its third weekend with $16.5 million. There were no high-profile releases in its third weekend. Finally fell to third place in its fourth weekend behind two debuts, New Year's Eve and The Sitter. Stayed in the top 10 for 5 weeks. There were too many Christmas releases, so it got crowded out. Fell pretty quickly after that. Grossed a total of $281.2 million. Third overall for 2011, behind only Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, and Transformers Dark of the Moon. One spot ahead of a recent episode subject, The Hangover Part 2. Breaking Dawn Part 1 was the fourth highest grossing of the 5 Twilight films, but it's close enough to basically be meaningless. The lowest is the original. The original made $192 million. It was not quite the peak of the Twilight phenomenon yet. After that, it's almost exactly the same. Eclipse made $300 million, New Moon made $296 million, Breaking Dawn Part 2 made $292 million, and Breaking Dawn Part 1 made $281 million. So again, all about the same. To recap from our Mockingjay episode, Breaking Dawn is in third place among the Part 1s. This has happened 4 times, going by gross. Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1 made $337 million, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 made $296. Breaking Dawn is in third with $282 million, one ahead of the last place, Allegiant, which only made Allegiant only made $66 million. As yet another reminder, Allegiant 2 still has never happened. Breaking Dawn Part 1 is the third widest release by an indie studio. The Twilight movies were distributed by Summit Entertainment, which eventually was bought by Lionsgate, but is still an independent studio. The top two of those are just two other Twilight movies. These are three of the only four times a quote-unquote independent feature played on more than 4,000 screens. The only other one is The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature.
That sounds like something you made up.
One of the many small rodent-based knockoff animated and a few all-time records, because this movie is on most of the charts. Breaking Dawn Part 1's opening day, it made $71.6 million in its opening Friday. That remains the 16th highest single day of box office of all time. The record, of course, is Avengers Endgame, $157.4 million. The top seven spots on that list are all Avengers, Star Wars, or Harry Potter. But Breaking Dawn Part 1, the 16th highest single day of all time. It is also the 29th highest weekend of all time. To hit the point that these movies all made the exact same amount of money, 27 and 28 on that list are also Twilight movies. They are very consistent. Number one again was Endgame with a $357 million weekend. That record now, especially post-corona, that record will never be broken. And this movie falls just outside the all-time top 100 movies. Breaking Dawn Part 1 is the 105th highest grossing film ever made. So it is very successful in spite of the fact that it doesn't make a lick of goddamn sense. Where to begin? Can we even...
First of all, let's just like put it out there. The trope of all of most vampire movies, or at least like modern day struck and vampire movies. Why is there the 1,000-year-old vampire always just so drawn to a 15-year-old girl?
I was just thinking about that because I like, so I'm turning 36 tomorrow, and the idea of me dating an 18-year-old is disgusting.
Exactly. So
he
like
is
this
marrying an 18-year-old, and he's how old?
I don't even know, but like, even like I always say that, like, even like with Buffy and Angel, like, it's still the same thing. Like, you have lived...
me when I was 13. I was like, you're old.
Exactly. It's like you have lived several lifetimes. You've seen so much. You have experienced so much. What could you possibly have in common with this 15-year-old girl? And what makes her so damn appealing that you have to risk everything in your life to make it happen?
Right?
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I have a question. So I saw Tony Keeps Us Timely. So they just announced that they're finally releasing the like sidequel book of Twilight, like within the same timeline, but it's like a different point of view, I think. Midnight Sun. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, okay. That's what that was. Okay.
A lot of people were talking about Twilight on Twitter. I saw a tweet that said, I don't understand why the Cullens have, you know, all the power and all the money in the world and they just keep going to high school.
Right.
There is a bit at the beginning of this movie where they have a piece of art made out of all their graduation caps.
Right. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, that's so clever. And I was like, wait, for real? They just, yes. Like, because I thought that tweet was like kind of a joke.
No, like, that's what they do. I think that's kind of like what was introduced in like one of the first movies.
Then how do they have so much money?
Because they've lived for 5,000 fucking years. Like, you'd have a lot of money too. Like, the dad is a doctor.
Is this an explanation or is this just my assumption? Like, I think I remember that they go to high school because they look like they're that. They don't really, but they look
right.
Like that. They're that age. So to like, because this is the side of the vampires that are integrating with society, then like, to not erase any suspicions, they have to do the things that their alleged age would do,
I guess. But it's also weird because like there's like what, five or six of them, and they're all in high school and they're all supposed to be brother and sister, but yet like four of them are doing it. Like, I don't
That was the other thing, is that it was hard for me to keep track of who all was a vampire and who wasn't, even though, as we discussed, I think in the unrecorded portion, they do whatever they can to make the vampires look very offsetting in this. Yes. Like, they're wearing contact lenses.
Are we talking about the golden eyes?
Their weird eyes. Like, at one point his eyes are red. It's like Colin said his eyes turn red when he's hungry, regardless.
Either way, they ain't blue or brown, and I don't understand why everybody just accepts that these pale-ass fuckers with golden eyeballs are normal.
And then also, are they traveling the country, like, and creating new identities every time they re-enroll in high school? Like,
I think so. Like, I think that's what the first one is about, is that they've just moved to Forks, and he's new to class, and sparks fly. Which brings you back to your original point. What the hell with this... with this relationship, especially when all of her defining is being basic the point of her character? Like, she's just the blandest, like, yeah, you're nice and like that kind of witty that isn't, but like that's right. That's her entire character, and his entire character is being a condescending prick to her
and stalker.
In a series where nothing makes sense, the thing that makes the least sense is this relationship.
Exactly.
So
it's just cool that he just pops up anywhere and everywhere all the time. Like, I think if I recall, like in the first couple ones, like he would just show up in her bedroom, like while she was asleep. He
watches her sleep.
Yeah. The fuck?
So I've heard people say that, like, she's just meant for you to map your personality onto. So they don't give her any characteristics that conflict with your
lazy writing. Wow.
Because I also got to tell you that my personality...
I'm going to have to subtract a couple points.
Yeah. My personality would not allow for any of this to happen.
No.
Any of these things.
I would have seen him interclass like, there's something not right about this dude. I'm going to have to stay far, far away from him.
This guy looks like his whole face has been vaguely CGI'd.
This is a series full of dead faces. At one point, Kristen Stewart says, "Why can't you see how perfectly happy I am?" Because they're not showing that in any way.
It's like you've had the same facial expression whether you're married, like walking down the wedding aisle, or finding a dead carp in your bed. Like, I don't, like, it's the same. You're just doing the same thing. There's no expression.
Listen, I mean, and I don't want to, you got into it a little bit. I don't want to get in the way of anybody's pulp entertainment. We know, I gladly watched the late 80s movie Sorority Girls at the Slimeball Bowl-O-Rama this week. I am not judging anybody. However, the problem I have always had since these movies first came out is not that they're, you know, tacky lowbrow entertainment. That's fine. The problem is it presents these behaviors like stalking and home invasion and being controlling as the gestures of a hopelessly in love romantic person. And really, which even at that, if this was for adults, you can separate that from reality. But since this was aimed at teens, it's just such a terrible influence in terms of what you're presenting as this is what romance looks like.
Right. And she's like literally changing herself to be with him forever. And it also, I don't understand how, okay, she's fresh out of high school, just graduated yesterday, and her mom is super stoked that she's getting married. What the?
I don't understand. I think that her dad's a single dad. I think that maybe her mom is like not a reliable person, and therefore her bad attitude makes a little bit more sense.
Right.
I truly don't care also.
Right. And I'm guessing he does not, like, when the movie goes on, but I couldn't remember if the dad knew that Edward was vampire and all that stuff.
On my very long list of questions. How many people at that wedding understood that they were at a vampire wedding?
I don't think a lot. I think only the vampires.
Only understood. The vampires. For a pivotal moment in the series, I barely picked up on it when it happened. I guess Jacob explained vampires and werewolves to her dad off screen before that scene where her dad comes back in at the end. Because her dad's like, well, I never, that kid turned into a wolf. Are you going to do something weird? Like, I think off screen. By the way, werewolves aren't just regular wolves, but big. Just a note for the art department.
Is that something you have firsthand knowledge of, Sean?
In all of my cinematic journeys through their werewolf movies and my studies of pop culture.
They walk upright. Why are you anyway?
And the fact that they're talking, like the talking bothered me, like them talking as wolves.
That was another one of my questions. Is that psychic communication that we are hearing? Because their mouths don't move. And everybody who was all upset at the Jon Favreau Lion King because it doesn't make sense for these photorealistic animals to move their mouths, I encourage you to watch the alternative.
Which is Look Who's Talking. It's Look Who's Talking, Werewolf Edition.
It was deeply upsetting. So one thing is that Colin, I told him, I was like, I remembered that I had to watch this movie at 9:30 last night. And I was like, no! So I was like, oh God, I gotta watch Twilight. And Colin said, is that the one with the wolf dragons?
You know what? Yeah, sure.
No, but what movie are you talking right. about?
Colin has a processing disorder. Sometimes it's hard for him to access words, and sometimes that is a gift.
Right. I would like to see Bella and Edward 10 years later. Like, I want to see how...
Yeah.
What happens afterwards, like, when she finally fucking realizes, oh, I've made a terrible mistake.
Do they have a 7-year itch? Do they have a 700-year itch? Like, how do immortal beings marry?
Hastily, apparently. She's still 18. Although, yes, while I admit that it's problematic that she changes literally her physiology for him, if you have to be a vampire to fuck, be a vampire. Like, 2/3 of this movie are her delaying the process of becoming a vampire.
Right.
When it would allow her first to have sex with her husband and then would allow her to not die. What are we waiting for?
I have no idea.
The dramatic conflict? Yeah, why is that conflict? Like, I'll be a vampire then. Like, what?
Right. And then we've got, like, the lovely little scene after they do it and she is all bruised up and he's like, ugh, I'm so sorry I did that.
How badly are you hurt?
Right. And so he says, you know, I can never apologize enough or whatever. And he walks away and makes the moment all about him. Now we're getting into battery. Like, I don't.
Although, admittedly, you shouldn't be injured. But when I saw it, I was like, well, she's not really in that bad of shit. Like, what? She's got some shoulder bruises? Like, she's
right.
fine. What are you?
Listen, I've gotten bruises from sex.
Right.
It's humans.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
It's a thing that happens.
I think it's a whole thing, like the whole her waiting and all that stuff. It was just an excuse for us to see all of the fucking montages that they wanted to expose us to. The whole, oh my God, I'm getting ready to have sex montage with her, like choosing an outfit and shaving her legs. It's, you just got married. Your legs should be shaved.
By the way, that had to be the longest day. In one day, they had the wedding, flew to Rio de Janeiro, took a boat to an island, and then she started getting ready.
Yeah, aren't you sleepy?
I did.
Yeah, one of you isn't a vampire yet.
I did not assume that was really. I definitely thought it was really funny that they think that that is what Brazil looks like. They're like, here's our Canadian island. Just imagine that we're in Brazil.
I wish the movie had left with Anna Kendrick. If it had just been like, we're done here. This is the only good character.
Right?
God, that she was in it, and she first appears in like a creepy dream sequence, and I was like, holy crap, is that Academy Award nominee Anna Kendrick?
I do appreciate her speech at the wedding.
Yes. Best part of the movie, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, she made valid points. She's like, you know, he picked Belle, even though she's not president of the class, so she's not a cheerleader. Basically, she's saying, this broad has nothing to offer. I don't understand why you chose her.
It probably made more sense in the book, but why would I assume that? What was with our diversion about Roaring Twenties Edward killing some people? Like, why did he have to confess that?
Right, yeah, I guess it's supposed to make us feel for him more or something, because he's now a tortured soul.
Where
he wasn't always good.
What does he eat now? Where are they just robbing blood banks?
I think so. And I don't
know. They are vegetarians in that they eat animal blood. Like, it's
so why
it's,
did he have a
it's one step down.
They why get, do you have a fridge full of O positive?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Oh, maybe it is blood banks. I thought it was like a cow.
Yeah, I'm always a little weird on this whole the good vampires and where they source their blood from thing, because I'm like, you could be indirectly killing people by
exactly.
robbing blood banks.
Exactly. Like, even though you're not like taking it straight from the tap, like you were still like you're messing up. You're definitely putting someone in danger at risk.
Right. Which is the good thing that True Blood did. That was a very smart. I've never really watched that show. I've seen a few episodes, but it's a very good narrative move.
It is. And, you know, True Blood is maybe, I watched the whole series and there's several characters that are amazing. And, but again, it's the same story. Like this thousand-year-old vampire falls in love with this waitress in this podunk town. But it does, I mean, spoiler alert, turns out she's a fairy, but okay.
Right. But here's the thing. I do think that you reach, like I said, I'm 36 or almost 36. It's a leap year. I'm 36. I wouldn't date an 18-year-old. That's gross. But as I get older, the age range increases, right? Mm-hmm. Like you reach a point of just being an adult. Right. And I feel like if you're 1,000 years old and you don't have many fellow 1,000-year-old peers, you would start to see people who are hundreds of years younger than you as peers, as adults. But teenagers,
but not a child,
are still teenagers.
But at least someone over 21. Come
right,
on.
Exactly.
Even now, like if I think someone in their mid-20s is hot, I'm like, oh, this feels naughty. Like, it's
yeah.
18.
Right.
She's 18.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I judge Leonardo DiCaprio, so.
That's true. Like, I didn't feel comfortable lusting after Michael B. Jordan until he turned a smooth 30. So, I mean, once it happened, it was like, here we go, game on.
When I first saw him, I was like, oh no. Like, I totally was like, I'm creepy and gross.
Well, I want to hear more of Robin's questions. I want to take a brief minute, almost an in memoriam segment, for the failed Twilight Squad. The many, many performers who thought they were going to launch their careers off of this and failed to do so. Acknowledging Kellan Lutz and Ashley Green, who seemed to have potential that has not panned out.
I believe Kellan is, if this is the correct one I'm thinking of, he is on a TV show called FBI Most Wanted right now.
He is.
So like I said, has not worked out.
I feel, you know what, that network procedural money, that right? Was in very nice house.
This was created by Dick Wolf. So even though it's on CBS, I still watch it because Julian McMahon is the lead, but it's really not that interesting.
My favorite thing about being out of touch with parts of pop culture is finding out that there are entire television franchises that I did not know exist. Like
Chicago Blank.
The whole Chicago, like one of the people who I was looking up on IMDb in this movie or I don't know, something, was on a Chicago show that has come and gone. Like there was a Chicago spinoff that got canceled. And I like only recently found out that those exist.
Yeah, I wasn't aware there were so many of those Chicago ones and they keep popping up.
There's a huge cultural blind spot for me.
The king of this crew, indisputably, is Taylor Lautner, who has actually just stopped. He has left the industry at this
really time. Like he, for real, or was he forced out?
Well, like, maybe, but he has not made a film in more than 4 years.
Wow.
He was appearing on a TV show, but not as a series regular as recently as 2018. But he has not done any appreciable acting work in more than 2 years. He has said, like, I'm stepping away from acting to focus on the important things in life. And is once again dating a younger woman, also named Taylor. It's
like
his second girlfriend with the same name as him.
Okay, he dated Taylor Swift.
He dated Taylor Swift, and now he's dating a nice young nurse from California, also named Taylor. I tried to figure this out. The closest thing, I mean, I think it's a three-part problem. One, he's terrible at acting and always
has. He's not very good.
He has a pretty face.
He's a pretty face, but he seems to be, like, I don't think anyone hates him, like, Kristen Stewart showed up at his birthday party, so like I'm sure they get along. But like I don't think anyone is like, man, I love spending time with that guy either. Like he seems like kind of a neutral at best presence. And he started asking for a ton of money when he made that movie here in Pittsburgh. It's got a one-word title: Abduction. Maybe
that sounds right.
I think so. Yeah.
Shout out to Camila, who made me laugh in the editing process when we were talking about Pittsburgh film movies, I think in Stigmata. She was like, what was that one with that little werewolf boy?
Well, for that, because it was at the height of Twilight Mania, he demanded and received $7.5 million. And like that continued to be his asking price. And so everyone just went, Oh, no, definitely don't need to give you that money to make a movie. I know that's not the only example of this. Rupert Grint from Harry Potter also is kind of like off in the wilderness. But like, I think for, you know, one of the principals in a mega franchise, his decline was instant.
Yeah, it's got to be. I'm sure it's like a lot of those factors like boiled in there. And I'm sure like even if you put in like exhaustion or just like and this inflated self of importance that you get, like now I'm asking for $7 million just because, you know, I made like 18 Twilight movies shirtless. Like, I don't it just
his shirt comes off within 10 seconds of him appearing on screen in this movie. I was like, they know what he is here for.
Right. There was I think there's a moment where Edward is even like, does this guy own a shirt?
why do these particular werewolves have to take shirts off but not the pants? What's going on? What? I know Incredible Hulk rules, but the wolves aren't wearing pants.
Where did the pants go? There must be just like loads of ripped clothing thrown throughout the woods in this area.
I
also kind of missed why Jacob's family is so protective of Bella. Like, she's not part of their tribe.
I think they decide she is.
Mm. Okay.
I don't understand. Why do the werewolves and vampires hate each other? And I know that that exists in other pop culture. Like, why is that a thing?
I think because, like, decades ago, a vampire came into their tribe or something, and one of the werewolves killed this vampire, and so it's just kind of like this beef.
And does that have something to do with Michael Sheen?
Probably
the murder vampire.
Probably.
I was just gonna say racism. I mean, it just seems like
that's a good explanation.
I mean, basically, yes. When you boil it way down, that's what it comes down to. Because there's a whole scene where old girl is being super rude to Jacob with the whole Fido dog food bowl and all that shit. And it was also kind of an awkward scene where he throws the hot dog at her, and her brothers like giggle about it. And it's just really weird.
I mean, every plot line in this entire series is that someone is threatened by the love between Bella and I think it starts with Edward's family, right? Like, isn't the first conflict like,
I have no idea.
You can't with this young human. And then it's the wolves. And then it's, you know, I think the division is that the evil murder vampires just eat people, as we see, and like they fear that the peaceful vampires are like building strength and are going to like ruin their Nazi vampire ways. And I guess that's what we're building to here. It's such a
probably because there's also the little the B plot or the C plot is there's another vampire that's churning out new vampires to make an army to fight the wolves.
Wait, did that happen in this movie?
I don't remember because okay. I kind of had like Freeform was playing all of the movies and I just had it. I just left it on the channel. Yes. So I was kind of in and out for a while. So I don't remember if it was this one. Could have been the one right before it. And the murder vampires, not Michael Sheen, but the one that was next to him, who just looks like he is waiting to be put out of his misery. Like every gasp that he takes, like everything he says. I love him so much. I don't know who this man is, but he is all of us watching this movie.
I legitimately loved the scene with the dream sequence with the pile of corpses. Like, perfect. It was done. Right. I was going to say it was the highlight of the movie. The highlight of the movie was the 10 seconds of Bride of Frankenstein we saw during the movie when Edward was in the theater. Other than that, the highlight was the pile of corpses dream sequence. Murder vampires, they were the thing to cover here, not poor little bland girl from the Pacific Northwest.
Quick girl aside, her wedding dress in the dream sequence is so much better than her wedding dress from reality. And so I was like thinking about it. I was like, when I was getting married, did I ever dream about my wedding? And did I dream myself in my real wedding dress? I wish I could remember. I don't. I also barely, like, this came out in November 2011. Like, the year before that, I was like obsessively watching movies with weddings in them and writing about them. That's how I started writing about movies. And so I like just missed this, which is a good thing.
Yes. I was speaking of like trying to think back, like I was still trying to figure out the attraction to Robert Pattinson, like with all of these little girls and why everybody was so drawn to him. I don't find him attractive, but then I had to think. I was like, who was my, when I was 15, who is my big lustful object there? And I think at that moment, like after I did some math, I think it was Brendan Fraser. And
oh.
I feel like a lot of people would have some like that wouldn't that doesn't really hold steady. In this.
No, I'm with you, Camila. Like, I definitely thought Brendan Fraser was really cute when I was young.
Like, I don't want to be obvious, but Katie Holmes at the time, like, that was kind of an open and shut thing. Like, yes, this is the most attractive person.
Wow.
She's super cute.
She's from my hometown.
She's very girl next door.
When she was on Dawson's Creek, was that the proper time for you?
Yeah, then she did a couple of, like, I'm in movies now, like Teaching Mrs. Tingle. And
yeah,
and
Disturbing Behavior.
Disturbing Behavior on Tubi. What a ridiculous movie that everyone is having a great time in. That is a movie where people are just embracing their camp.
Well, yeah, and every time that, is it The Flies, that song comes on, I think it takes me right back to that movie. So.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We really have to, this is going to be our longest episode ever because we just.
Didn't we talk about the horrible baby?
Yes. Okay. Here. Yes. The creepy imprinting business where Jacob.
Oh my God. We haven't even gotten to it yet.
I know it. The grown ass Jacob. So imprinting is a thing that the werewolves do when they meet their soulmate. And from what I can tell, but from what I understand, it's one sided. So it doesn't matter.
That's another question.
it doesn't matter what the other person.
What if the baby doesn't love him?
Right.
Because can you imagine being that baby and being like, you were in love with my mother?
Right. And now you want to hook up with me?
Like, talk about your Amy March syndrome times 10.
This whole thing is, yes. So, yes.
He's got this voiceover where he's like, your life is dedicated to them, whether it's as a friend or a brother. And then he trails off because the next part was like, or you want to fuck this baby. Like,
right. Because when we were introduced to the concept of imprinting, it was all about soulmates and them like being booed up. When he's like looking around and seeing everybody in their happy relationships. And now we want to like clean it up a little bit and be like, oh, whatever she needs. So you're just lurking around for life.
I can observe that what's happening here is that they're writing Jacob.
As they go.
Yeah. But she's writing Jacob into a happy ending so that the Team Jacob people, like, there's a defense. Like, no, he's, but
that's
how
gross.
how much better if he had imprinted on that one vampire that really hated him.
Right.
If they had a much ado about nothing, like, I hate you and everything about you, sudden turn, we're in love.
No, yeah.
Sure. And no one had to love an infant.
Right. And we could have gone on and discovered what? Were-vamp babies.
I feel like part of it is meant to be that, like, his love for Bella was actually because he sensed because
she
DNA.
Was carrying that
yeah
egg, all these
he was in love with that one specific
makes
egg.
It worse makes it worse.
He was like, I'm zeroing in on your left ovary. There's something in there that I just can't get enough of.
OMG.
I did check my notes to see if there's anything else, and I just saw that I wrote down, I am uncomfortable.
But about the only thing I haven't hit is, you have to pay so little attention to follow along. I think I looked at about 25% of the frames of this movie and didn't miss anything.
They're ugly. Also, this movie is ugly.
Yeah, it is. One of the notes I have is that Bella looks like the sloth victim from Seven, like towards the end.
No, mine says pregnant dying Bella looks like the Phantom of the Opera. So
I do respect that they CGI'd her into emaciation as opposed to making her eat kale and dust, to quote Anne Hathaway.
I do want to give props to the regeneration CGI animation.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Look, there were like two or I'm not going to give this the lowest score that I ever would, even though it's bad, because they're like mildly entertaining moments and some things where it's like, this is kind of cool. I feel like I can imagine a world where these aren't bad. Does that make sense? Like, this story, if you had written Bella's character better, avoided some of the creepy things, and also, to be fair, if I knew the mythology, like, a lot of my lack of enjoyment of this movie was because I was like, what's happening? Who are these people? What does this all mean?
I honestly don't think it would have helped anything.
Well, probably not.
Let's rate it as we pass the 1 hour mark. Certainly the longest we've ever gone without getting out of the main segment.
Only 50 minutes of live recording.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Right, right.
I don't know. It's not my lowest score, but it's close. Like you said, it's allegedly enjoyable and kind of watchable and weird. I mean, like, normally I like things that are batshit weird, and this is certainly that. Yes. So, 21.
All right. Well, I did a different take this time. I started this movie at 10 points for being a movie and throughout anything that tickled my fancy, I added points, and anything that was just too ridiculous, I subtracted points, and I ended up at 17.
All right.
I'm feeling much more generous. I'm going to go with 35.
Wow.
Yeah, I love how 35 sounds really high here.
I know, right?
You're saying that this could have theoretically been a third worse than it was. Final score is 24. 24 and a third is our score for Twilight, Breaking Dawn, Part 1 on the overall chart. Not at the bottom, but third from the bottom. It is above Divergent, and it is above Rob Zombie's Halloween. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It is also above The Hangover Part 2 by just a little bit.
The hair.
Which it deserves to be.
Yeah. You know, we probably should have made some sort of sacrifice to Tony Goldwyn and so that the next movie will not be one of the 50 Shades, because that might take me over the edge.
Or, I mean, if it was Breaking Dawn Part 2, I'd be like, all right, fine, let's go.
All right, let's check on our bingo card.
Vampire or witches is certainly taken care of.
But I think it's also been brought to our attention that we might have to retract a square.
Oh, that's right. Yes, thank you for remembering this.
Listener, fan of the podcast, Abby.
And Mike Rubino.
And Mike Rubino. I think it was mostly Mike, pointed out to us that Planet of the Apes does not count as a remake.
We had originally marked off remake for The Fugitive. And
oh,
we said
that's right.
Adaptation of a television series,
that's right,
rather than a remake, which I think is fair.
Yeah, so we will go ahead and remove remake square is gone.
Retraction.
Retraction. So, all right, on to this bullshit.
Vampires or witches, the square made for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on a book.
Based on a book is certainly added to the list. The only other question I have is if Bella is a fish out of water as a human among the vampires. I don't think that's what we meant.
No, and definitely not at this point in the series. Probably in the first one, maybe. But
anybody got a bingo?
No.
I am still at least two away from any bingo.
Same.
Yeah, I was one away, but the remake return. I guess that's right. I mean, I guess the 21 Jump Street movie isn't a remake of the TV series 21 Jump Street. So,
right.
Yeah, I think that's correct. All right, if you're playing along at home, Vampire or Witches, and based on a book. We've gone long enough. Should we do a lightning round of You Can't Handle the Truth, or how do you want to handle it?
I mean, I can be real quick about what I saw.
Sure.
I saw the second Boy movie, Part 2. Brahms, speaking of Katie Holmes. And not bad. I mean, they're not the best. I wasn't expecting the second one. Like, the first one was all right. I mean, it's totally watchable. Like, I would highly suggest it if you've got nothing else to do on a Saturday afternoon. Like, it's fine.
I'm completely... Mary Beth saw at least the first one, and I just... Despite, you know, usually seeing any horror that comes out, I did not engage with that series at all. Dolls, right? More doll horror?
Yep, exactly. Yep. I mean, it was sufficiently creepy. And for those who are keeping track, I am on Ant-Man in my watching my DVDs in alphabetical order.
I watched Extraction with Chris Hemsworth, the bronze medal Chris.
How was that?
On Netflix. It's a pretty good, it's very violent. It's like John Wick-y kind of, where it's just like he murders a lot of killing, a lot of shooting people in the head and then in the chest or vice versa. But sometimes I'm in the mood for exactly that. So right. I was in the mood for exactly that when I watched this, and I enjoyed it very much.
Cool.
Yeah, I saw it. I kind of gave it like a, you know, a thumb leaning towards up.
Like, I don't think it's good.
No,
it did what it says on the box, you know.
Well, it's directed by a longtime stuntman and stunt coordinator, and really feels like it,
like John Wick.
The only thing that bothered me, we now know this is not the primary use of Chris Hemsworth. Like, if you need someone
he should be funny.
Yeah, right. if you if you need someone to be big and shoot, that's what you get John Cena for. Like,
right.
we know now that, like, you can't, he is not the guy to be this silent, stoic, troubled character. He's fine at it, but you're not using him to his strengths.
Yeah, exactly.
I would also say that you should use John Cena in comedies. True. So both of them are big guys who are funnier than they are good at brooding.
So what? Are we down to Dave Bautista? My Spy is not very good.
I also watched Stuber this week. Also very much just total garbage that I chewed up like delicious garbage. Delicious garbage. It was like McDonald's breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Speaking of new Netflix releases, All Day and a Night is a drama from writer-director Joe Robert Cole. He was the co-screenwriter of Black Panther with Ryan Coogler, and this is his, you know, big, like, now I get to do one myself. It's not getting great reviews. I really liked it. Like, it's kind of getting middling. It's about a young man that ends up in the prison that his dad is also in. The young man is Ashton Sanders, the middle Chiron from Moonlight. And the dad is Jeffrey Wright. I thought it was really good. I was very surprised that it wasn't like, finally a great movie in quarantine, because I was very impressed. But see if you agree. I liked it a lot. All Day and a Night is on Netflix now. Do we draw a movie?
Let's do it.
Yeah, dude.
I wonder how Tony feels about the sacrifices we have made with War of the Planet of the Apes right into... although, as long as we don't get another one, I'm very happy that... Tony is making his presence felt. I'm very happy that we drew Twilight, because, man, was this a subject. Let's just say a subject. I really don't want to watch this movie, but it's up to Robin. The film is M. Night Shyamalan's Glass from 2019. The sequel to Split. I mean, you're the only one with a veto. I have made my feelings about this series well known.
I am vetoing it if we can't watch it for free.
But
good policy. Let me look it up right now.
Oh, I think it's on HBO.
It's like old and new enough. It hits that sweet spot.
Your call. If I have to watch Glass, I will console myself by watching Unbreakable, because I've never seen it.
Oh, well, then I'm making you watch Unbreakable.
Oh, okay. Well,
let's talk about Unbreakable next week.
We're going to talk about Unbreakable and Glass. Yeah. Next week. I'm not going to get in. Find previous things I've written or episodes of
Sean's
You Can't Handle the Truth.
Angriest You Can't Handle the Truth is about Split.
Yeah. Really?
That's
right. That's right. I recall we kind of touched on
his
it.
Stomped through his house.
Yeah.
He drove angry and then continued on while pacing angrily around his house talking about how bad Split is. Also, Glass is a movie that I think I have, like, I might have already watched this. I might have watched it when it first came onto HBO, and yet it has already escaped my brain.
I went to the theater and saw it.
Well, next week we will
I remember being angry about it afterwards.
Acknowledging the existence of Glass and talking about Unbreakable.
I don't want to say it has a great cast. It has great actors in it. I always love to see Anya Taylor-Joy and...
Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson, James McAvoy. Yeah. Tough month. Tough month on the podcast, but... Here we are. Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1, released November 18th, 2011. What was the number one song in America when Twilight...
Were we still doing Adele at that point?
Probably, but that's not the answer.
Okay.
The party anthem? The LMAFO?
Oh, yes, that was huge.
That was huge. It was not the winner this particular weekend. LMFAO topped the charts 6 consecutive weeks, not including this week. Rolling in the Deep was the number one song of the year, but not the week in question. This song would just crack number one as this movie came out and stayed there for the rest of the year.
Was it Lady the Gaga? Owl City song?
One at a time.
The Fireflies song?
No.
Lady Gaga?
No, not Lady Gaga either. It's an R&B singer featuring a guy who I don't know for anything but this song.
Beyonce?
Was it that Rihanna song?
Yes, but which one?
Stay?
No.
Rihanna, 2011. Was it with Neo?
No. The tricky thing here is this is earlier than I thought this song came out. It is Rihanna featuring Calvin Harris, We Found Love.
Oh!
Okay.
I thought that song was later than the fall of 2011.
You've only heard of Calvin Harris through We Found Love? He's huge!
Is he a big
deal? Huge!
I don't know him outside of this song.
Oh, he has a ton of really great songs. You should go listen to This Is Calvin Harris on Spotify. Like, he is very good at writing pop songs.
Interesting.
This okay. is
also dated Taylor Swift for a while.
Apparently, who hasn't?
Right. That is true.
This is my second weird pop music blind spot this week. If you're not one of the literally four people who we had a video chat with the other night, you missed me thinking that it was pronounced Duplo, like accent on the second part. Everyone's like, how do you say that?
It's not as fancy as you want it to be. It's like I always try to make Angela Bassett, Angela Bassett.
Which we've talked about before.
Okay, I couldn't remember
also, it's people say Rihanna. Her name's Rihanna.
It's Rihanna. Okay, yeah. I did not.
I've heard her say her own name, and she says Rihanna.
Like when you hear Steve Buscemi say his own name, and you're like, I don't believe you.
No, what? We're not going to be pronouncing that. Or like, who? Mark Ruffalo. We've talked about before.
Right,
I will never say Ruffalo on my own. I will only say it when I'm thinking about it.
He's always Ruffalo. Sorry, bro.
Yeah.
Number one movie in America.